Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Ty Bollinger as my special expert guest. Ty Bollinger is a CPA, health freedom advocate, cancer researcher, former competitive bodybuilder, and author of the best-selling book, Cancer, Step Outside the Box. After losing several family members to cancer, Ty refused to accept the notion that chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery were the most effective treatments available. He began a quest to learn all he possibly could about alternative cancer treatments and the medical industry. What he uncovered was shocking. Ty has now made it his life mission to share the remarkable discovery that the vast majority of all diseases, including cancer, can be easily prevented and even cured without drugs or surgery. Speaking from personal experience and extensive research, Ty has touched the hearts and changed the lives of thousands of people around the world. Ty speaks frequently to health groups at seminars, conferences, churches, and is a regular guest on multiple radio shows. He also writes for numerous magazines and websites. Good morning, Ty. Welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hey, good morning, Corey. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure indeed. And Ty, you know, this is a controversial topic. It's filled with debate and energy and so much passion. It's unbelievable. But let's get right into it. You know, that statement that you've discovered something that was shocking. What was it that you uncovered that was so shocking?
Sure, yeah. Let me preface this question real quickly with the fact that what got me into this line of research was the loss of both of my parents to cancer. And that was what prompted me to begin researching cancer and cancer treatments. And what I did discover as I researched cancer treatments that was so shocking to me at the moment that the discovery was the fact that there are many, many natural, holistic, alternative-type treatments for cancer that work much, much better than what I call the big three in my book, which is chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. But these treatments are not only not well-known, but they are actively being suppressed by what I call the cancer industry because they work so well and they are very, very inexpensive in comparison to the typical traditional treatments for cancer. That shocked me because I had always been under the presupposition that everyone involved with treating diseases was only interested in helping the patient and was not looking out for the pocketbook effect, the bottom line, you know, the money. And as I began to research cancer treatments, I realized that the health of the cancer patient is not the primary motivating factor in what treatments are prescribed today. The primary motivating factor is the money that can be generated from the treatments.
Now, when you read the Hippocratic Oath, which apparently all doctors have to memorize and quote and conform to, how does that commitment to the welfare of the patient and to the idea of doing no harm, how does that mesh with what you just said, where the money and the pocketbook and the resources that are generated toward that end, isn't there some kind of contrast in the two?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's a great question. The two do not mesh at all. As a matter of fact, doctors that are out there treating cancer with the big three treatments and that they know better, they are violating their oath. And I know dozens, hundreds of doctors that have gone to medical school, that have their MD or their ND or their homeopath, I mean, you name it, just doctors across the board, that when they realized that they were violating their oath, especially in the cancer industry, by treating cancer with chemo, radiation, and surgery, that they were actually hurting the patient and not helping the patient, they got out of it. They either went a different line of medicine or completely got out of oncology. It's amazing the number of doctors that did that, and it's amazing the number of doctors that I know personally today that actually have moved out of the country because there is active persecution of doctors in the United States that will treat cancer naturally, that won't use the big three treatments because they know they're harming their patient more than they're helping them. But those doctors are forced to go offshore, so to speak, in order to practice medicine the way that they deem reasonable in order to help cancer patients because the FDA won't allow them to treat cancer naturally here in the United States.
Ty, how do we know that, you know, someone presents with cancer, okay, and let's say that it's not terminal, or potentially it could be. How do we know that the chemo, radiation, and surgery didn't kill them? In other words, the doctors usually hide behind the fact that the patient came to them with the cancer and they were going to die anyway. So is there a way of knowing that it was the cancer and not the drugs, or the drugs and the cancer? Are we there yet?
That's a great question. And, you know, until a few months ago, I wouldn't have had a very good answer for that question. But I guess it was probably middle of the summer, back in July sometime. I was doing a radio interview with a program out of New York City. And I had a doctor that called in. And he's a former pathologist for the United States Department of Justice. And one of the things that he did while he was with DOJ was he performed autopsies on cancer patients. He also investigated crime scenes and determined cause of death and did a lot of really interesting stuff. But one of the things he did with DOJ was he did autopsies on cancer patients to determine cause of death. He told me on that show, he called in and he said that what I was saying was right in line with his personal findings, and that the hundreds of autopsies that he had done on cancer patients, he had never had a single cancer patient die from cancer. Every one of the cancer patients that he had performed autopsies on had died from either radiation poisoning, chemotherapy poisoning, or detrimental effects from a surgery that the surgery had killed the cancer patient. He had not had one cancer patient ever actually die from the cancer itself. It was always from the conventional treatment. And when he called in and told me that, it really blew my mind, because I knew that. I had read that, and I had had that experience that the traditional treatments kill more than they help. But to have a former forensic pathologist with the United States Department of Justice that had performed hundreds of autopsies and had never had a single cancer death from the cancer, that blew me away.
Well, it is mind-boggling, and of course, we both know why that information is not available to mainstream, and it is not published in journals and discussed in media. You know, of course, that would embarrass the industry, and it would bring light where there is darkness. But this cancer seems to be proliferating. It's so common that people talk about it as if it has no more significance than whether they had toast that morning or not. You know, what kind of cancer do you have, John, and where are you getting treated, Susie? And what's your experience like? And people buy the gear and, you know, expect to see the hair loss and all that. So what's going on? Why is cancer so common? Why are so many people being diagnosed with cancer today?
Yeah, great question. First of all, when we look at cancer, we think of a ravaging disease, which you can't recover from. And it just comes with the territory that you're going to have chemo, radiation, and surgery. The fact is that we all develop cancer cells throughout our entire body, our whole lives. Our bodies are normally, though, however, able to find and identify these cancer cells and destroy them before they are able to grow uncontrollably. Now, this is just a normal occurrence for us to have cancer cells in our body, but it's only when the healthy body becomes unable to mount a response, a defense to the cancer cells, we have what we would think of as being cancer, and the cancer becomes life-threatening. It's basically a failure of our normal immune system to fend off these aberrant cells. Why are so many people being diagnosed with cancer now? I believe, and based on good research, that it's because our immune systems, which is the key, are being compromised by the foods that we eat and the air that we breathe and the water that we drink and the environmental toxins that we're exposed to 24/7. To such an extent that our immune systems can no longer mount this typical defense to these cancer cells, which we all have. And it's at that point that your immune system reaches a level of toxic overload to which it cannot recover from. And that's when the cancer cells form these tumors, and they form the blood supply of their own, which is called angiogenesis. They form their own blood supply and become life-threatening in many instances. The tumors are really not the thing that threatens life. Typically, the tumors are your body's own response to the cancer cells trying to quarantine those cells from everything else. What typically happens with a cancer patient is the cancer begins to take the nutrition that your body needs to live on, and the cancer steals it. Most cancer patients either die from the treatments, the conventional treatments, or from what is called cachexia, which is the wasting syndrome, where your body doesn't have any nutrition because the cancer's taking it all, and you wither away. And you see the pictures of the cancer patients that look like concentration camp victims, and it's because they're dying from what's called cachexia. So that, in my opinion, and based on the research that I've done, is the reason that there is such a proliferation of cancer today, is the fact that our immune systems are being compromised and we can no longer fend off those cancerous cells that we all have.
So in the literature and within the holistic movement, integrative, usually what's brought to mind is that somehow we're responsible. We've been living a certain way. We've been abusing ourselves, neglecting ourselves. We've eaten incorrectly. We don't train or exercise. We carry too much body fat. What about a connection to infants and children? Do you think that there's a connection between cancer and immunization and the overuse of antibiotics?
Well, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. Because when you're dealing with cancer in an adult, there's no doubt that in many cases of cancer, and I don't want to blame a cancer victim for being diagnosed with cancer, but in many cases, it could have had something to do with their diet and other lifestyle choices. And it also has to do with certain things that they're being exposed to that they have no control over, such as the folks around Chernobyl that got cancer. There's many Japanese cancer victims right now that people are not aware of that are close to Fukushima because of the radiation. In those kind of situations, the person can't do anything about it. But when it comes to an infant, the infants don't have a choice either, do they? They come out of the womb and immediately, and if you're in a traditional type hospital setting, they're going to jab you with some kind of immunization immediately. They're going to basically poison your pristine blood supply with toxins, which will eventually cause immune system failure and other disease. The antibiotics is another thing that you brought up that's a really good point. The antibiotics have a definitive link with degenerative disease, including cancer. So, because antibiotics kill the good flora in your body, the good bacteria in your body, as well as the bad. And about 70 to 75% of your immune system is actually generated in your gut, in your flora and fauna that are in your gut. And so when you have antibiotics, it kills that immune system in that way. And so you have antibiotics that kill the immune system. You've got vaccinations which further kill the immune system. And so that's the reason that the infant cancer rates are skyrocketing, is because of antibiotics and vaccinations, which compromise the immune system of the little babies. And they can't fight off cancer either. No fault of their own. They have no choice. They are the victims of a medical system that is after money. And vaccinations are very, very lucrative.
Now, when you look at chemo, radiation, and surgery, and I'm thinking of the physicians and the healthcare practitioners who administer it, they don't make the chemo drugs, and they don't build the radiation machines, and of course, the surgeons perform the surgery, but how much of a role does the FDA and Big Pharma play in this whole process? Do we blame it all on the doctors, or really, what's the essence? What's generating and moving this thing? Is it a collaboration, or is it one single group of people? How do you see that?
That's a real good question there. I don't blame the doctors, typically, because the doctors are usually doing what they were taught in medical school. And in medical school, they're taught a very drug-intensive style of treating cancer, a very radiation-intensive style of treating cancer. They're taught that the big three treatments are the only hope for cancer patients. So those doctors that don't know any better, you can't blame them at this point, because they've been brainwashed just like the rest of us in this area. However, when a doctor becomes aware of this and he begins to see the research and actually begins to think on his own, if he or she continues doing this, treating cancer this way and resulting in the deaths of cancer patients, they are responsible for it. If they're ignorant of it, it's one thing. But once they become aware of this, and many doctors I know personally have walked away from what they were doing because they began to realize that they were killing cancer patients. That is their fault, and that's on their conscience. But to answer the question specifically, the FDA and Big Pharma, they are the controllers. They're the ones that control the information that gets out there to the doctors. See, the doctors get their continuing education from medical journals, and medical journals have over 90% of their funding, their advertisements in the big centerfold spreads of the medical journals from the drug companies. And so those medical journals are only going to be talking about treatments that are drug intensive, because 90% of their funding comes from Big Pharma. When you look at the FDA and Big Pharma, there's a recent USA Today article that talked about the conflict of interest between the FDA drug approval process and the big pharmaceutical companies, and it showed that over half of the experts that are hired to advise the U.S. government on the safety and the effectiveness of drugs, which is synonymous with medicine to them, they have financial ties to the pharmaceutical companies that are trying to get the drug passed. I mean, it's like the fox guarding the hen house. You've got the FDA, which is supposed to be guarding our health. They have the ties to the pharmaceutical companies. They're the ones pushing the drugs. They're the ones pushing the chemotherapy. And so people think that because something is FDA approved, that that's the gold standard and it's safe, when in reality, if something FDA approved, what it mostly means is that they have funded the studies, they've bought off the doctors, they're being paid off by the pharmaceutical companies because the boards of directors of the FDA and the big pharmaceutical companies are one and the same, and they're making a pretty big profit on it. That's what it means when you see something has been approved by the FDA. It doesn't mean that it's safe. It means that that drug is going to make them a heck of a lot of money.
You know, when you really look at that, it seems just a toxic way to move in any direction. And it's sad, but it creates anger, and it's almost like a desire to move against it. And at least what you're doing is letting people know. And you've got the real-life experience. Now, I was mentored by a physician when I was younger. He was preventive integrative medicine, and he had gone to Germany and had learned about the ozone therapy for the treatment of cancer, came back to Vancouver, mm-hmm. set up shop, and was immediately closed down by Health Canada and threatened with the loss of his license, etc. So there must be a lot of that going on as well. The people that are trying to do the good work are being prevented or suppressed by the enemy. What seems to be obvious, and they're supporting the wrong group of individuals or companies, corporations, big pharma, whatever. What is the connection between cancer and the physicians engaged in the administration of the therapies and FDA and also big pharma? Are these people all in hoots together?
Yeah, that's a great question. Health Canada, the FDA, the TGA in Australia, all of these regulatory bodies that are supposedly in charge of making sure that we are safe, our health is safe, are really the ones that are compromising our health, because they've bought off onto the pharmaceutical company lies. Not only have they bought off, they are in bed with the pharmaceutical companies. If you look at the study that I mentioned earlier, the conflict of interest in the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies, there was a recent article in the USA Today that dealt with the conflict of interest between the FDA and big pharmaceutical companies, what I call big pharma. And in the article, the writer, Dennis Cochon, mentions that over half of the experts that are hired to advise the government, which is the FDA, on the safety and effectiveness of medicine and drugs, they have financial relationships with the big pharmaceutical companies that will be the recipients of the money generated from those drugs. In other words, you've got a conflict of interest, a huge conflict of interest. See, the experts are supposed to be independent, but the USA Today found that over 54% exact, they have direct financial interests in those drugs being approved because they're being paid by those drugs, right? So you've got conflicts of interest, including stock ownerships, consulting fees, research grants, etc. In the United States, at least, federal law prohibits the FDA from using experts with financial conflicts of interest, but the FDA, it's funny, Corey, the FDA has the option to waive this restriction. So they can't use experts that have financial conflicts of interest unless they feel like it. And since that law was put into place in 1998, over 800 times in the drug approval process here in the United States, the FDA has waived that restriction. And they've employed experts that have financial ties to the drug companies making the drugs that they're testing to see if they're safe. It's absurd. It's like you or I having a restriction on what we can do unless we feel like waiving the restriction. So it's not really a restriction at all, is it, if you're able to waive it at will? That's the position that the FDA is in. And so the FDA is supposed to be here in the United States guarding our health and making sure that the drugs that we take are safe, when in reality, they're not. It's like the fox guarding the hen house. They have financial ties with the companies, so the drugs that they're going to approve, whether they're safe or not, are going to be the ones that are the most lucrative. When you look at the situation that occurred about a year and a half ago in April or March of 2010 with Dr. Scott Rubin, he was on the Pfizer's Bureau, and he was the one that ran the chief test that got Vioxx approved. Vioxx is a drug, by the way, that has killed almost 60,000 people since it was approved. It later turns out that in 2010, that Dr. Rubin pled guilty to falsifying his research on Vioxx. Okay, this is typical standard operating procedure with the FDA and the drug companies. Turns out that Dr. Rubin did not just falsify his research, he made it all up. He didn't even have any patients that he tested Vioxx on. He just made up everything, and he got Vioxx approved, and Vioxx has killed 60,000 people. But we still trust the FDA and the drug approval process that it's going to make us safe. People need to wake up. It's not making us safe. It's endangering our lives. And so he gets off with a small fine. Meanwhile, those 60,000 people that have died as a result of his falsified research, they're still dead. But you have the FDA here in the United States, instead of making sure that the drug approval process keeps us safe, they do stunts like happened at the 1st of August this year, where they raid Rawsome Foods in California, which was a raw milk dairy, and the FDA thugs come in there with their guns drawn and their SWAT-style raid and their helmets and automatic weapons, and they raid a raw milk dairy that produces raw milk and raw cheese and organic vegetables because of one of the charges against them was mislabeling cheese. So what gives? What kind of a country are we living in where the FDA allows drugs that kill to be approved and they spend their manpower and their time raiding raw dairies?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I call it the insanity of humanity. I was just down at the law courts here in Vancouver to testify for someone that needed me, and I saw the Lady of Justice, the big statue, and I looked at that, and I looked at the blindfold around her eyes, and then I investigated it, you know, the legend and the history and why she's blindfolded, and she's supposed to be blindfolded from the personal bias of her own emotions, and the scales are, you know, are held up, and that's supposed to be evidence, and then she's got the sword. That's an idealism, but the reality is that in the courts of men, there is no justice, and the blindness, the men and the women who are engaged in this very process called the treatment of cancer, that are all doing what they do, they're blinded. You know, I hold them responsible. I can't help it. I just hold all men responsible for their action. But, Ty, what can we do? Okay, we know that the system's corrupted. We know that they bow down to the god of money, and they worship money. And it seems like the entire monetary system is destroying the planet and all the people and corporations, et cetera, involved. So what can you and I do? Let's say that we've got a friend, or even ourselves, and you know we're trying to live wisely and doing the right things, but so be it, we find out that we've got cancer. What is the approach? If you're saying that these big three are going to kill you, what do we do? What's the starting point?
Yeah, great question, because most people, when they're faced with a cancer diagnosis, have no clue what to do. So they go to their doctor. The doctor gives them the prescription that they give to everybody, the big three, chemo, radiation, surgery. Let's get to it as soon as possible. You need to start tomorrow morning or you're dead. The knowledge is power, and that's a cliche, but it's true. And so first thing that people can do is arm themselves with knowledge before the diagnosis comes. And that's the whole purpose that I wrote the book, is so people would have in one stop, you know, in one book, I feel like a pretty good summary of what they need to know to be healthy, to stay healthy, and then to choose a cancer treatment if they are diagnosed. So the first thing that people can do is empower themselves with knowledge before that diagnosis comes. But if a diagnosis does come, then what you need to do is consult with a naturopath, and I refer to many naturopaths and holistic doctors in the book that can tutor you, so to speak, not necessarily even see you in person if you're not in the area, but there are many doctors that do consultations on the phone, but they can work with you to help you on your treatment and pick a treatment that would fit your type of cancer. So there's many treatments. There's over 20 treatments that I have in the book. Cancer Step Outside the Box is the name, by the way. Many treatments that I have in there that I detail. And so it's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all approach. Certain specific types of cancers might be treated with one alternative treatment while another might need another. For instance, a brain cancer, fast-growing brain cancer. I just had a close friend die of brain cancer in New Zealand. That's a dangerous type of cancer, and that's one of the few cancers that I will recommend that you might listen to a typical traditional surgeon on, because if a brain cancer is growing, the tumor is growing so fast in the brain, there's really no place for it to go, right? You have your skull there. So that's a situation where you might need surgery to remove some of that tumor to give yourself some room in the brain before you get onto an alternative treatment. But there are dozens of treatments that you can choose from. they're outlined in the book, and they're outlined all over the internet. If you choose not to buy the book, the treatments are there. The benefit of having the book is they're all in one place for you. But by no means is my book the only good book on alternative treatments. They're out there. Many treatments are very well known. There's many herbal treatments. There's tinctures. There's teas that you can drink. There's different kind of diets that you can be on. There's detoxification process that you would need to go on immediately to detox your body. A full body detox is what I would always recommend to cancer patients, to get rid of the toxicity that caused the immune system to be overloaded that then caused the cancer. There's a whole list of things that you would want to do, and it's all outlined in the book. That would probably take me a half an hour to go into now, but there is definitely a procedure that you would go through. And that was one of the motivating factors for me in publishing the book, was to get that procedure out there to everybody and make it available to people so that when they have that diagnosis, and the World Health Organization says that by the year 2020, 1 in 2 men, 1 in 3 women will have that diagnosis, that you have the knowledge that you need to make a good decision. And you're not ramrodded into choosing chemo, radiation, or surgery, none of which are good choices, so that you have the knowledge to be able to discuss this with your doctor.
So what is your website, Ty?
The website is cancertruth.net, cancertruth.net.
And if I go there, can I order your book or get insight on your website about, you know, cancer and some of the alternatives?
Sure. Yeah, you can get a lot of information on the website. I do a monthly newsletter. You can go check the newsletter archives. If you want to purchase the book there, you can go to the purchase page and purchase the book. You can purchase the ebook or the printed copy. And one thing I want to make clear is that I'm not doing this for the money. And I never did do this for the money. When I published the book 5 years ago, I remember looking at my wife and asking her if we would sell a copy, because I didn't have any idea we'd ever sell a copy. I didn't publish it to sell. I published it to help people. And it just so turns out that we've sold over 100,000 copies in the last 5 years. So it's been a real blessing to a lot of people. But I never wanted money to be in the way of a person getting the book. So if somebody is in a financial situation, they can't afford the book, all they have to do is email me and I give a free copy. I've given out over 10,000 books since we published the book to people that are financially in a tough situation.
Wow, that's fantastic. And is the book also, is it an e-book?
Yeah, I've got an e-book, and I've also got a soft cover copy that you can buy on my website, on Barnes & Noble, Amazon. You just search for Cancer Step Outside the Box, and you'll probably find several dozen sellers online for the book. So it's out there pretty good. It's not difficult to find. And I've also recently put out, in conjunction with a naturopathic doctor named Dr. Michael Farley, we put out another book on medicinal herbs that's now for sale, called A Guide to Understanding Herbal Medicine and Surviving the Coming Pharmaceutical Monopoly. So it's another interesting book on medicinal herbs and how to make your own medicines.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm a competitive bodybuilder, so are you, so I can relate to the discipline, the dedication, the physical, mental, emotional work involved. Now, I'm going to sort of create a scenario. Is that similar to the effort and the energy that is required, number one, to live well, to prevent cancer, but also the initiative, the drive that it takes to overcome the condition once we find out we have it?
Yeah, that's an excellent analogy, because that's exactly what it takes. You see, cancer is a disease of a compromised immune system, and that compromised immune system is likely a choice of many factors that you can't control, and also many factors that you can control, like your diet, like your exercise or lack thereof, and so on. It's likely a disease of a compromised immune system caused by many lifestyle choices that need to be changed. And so when you make the analogy of being like a competitive bodybuilder getting ready for a contest, that's exactly what it needs to be. Except in the case of infants that have cancer from a compromised immune system of vaccines and antibiotics that we talked about earlier. It's likely that cancer is the result of years and years of abusing yourself with the foods that you eat and your choices for exercise or your lack of choices for exercise. You see, the first thing that a cancer patient needs to do is completely change the way that he or she eats and exercises in order to fight the cancer. And so it's going to require likely a revamp of your entire dietary choices, your nutritional regimen, your choices in foods. You're going to have to get off eating the fast foods if you've been eating that, eating the processed foods, eating the sugary foods, and get to a natural, organic, healthy diet. And that's difficult. That's very difficult for somebody that has grown up addicted to the processed foods because, you know, quite honestly, if you're addicted to them, they'd really taste good to you. And there's some psychological and physical addictions to those foods. So that's a very, very difficult thing for a cancer patient to do. So very, very good analogy, because that's what it's going to take, a change in diet, change in exercise. One of the best exercises that you can do while we're on the subject is actually rebounding on a little mini trampoline, because those mini trampolines, called rebounders, stimulate the lymphatic system, the lymph flow. And the lymphatic system is one of your three primary detoxification systems in your body. We all know about the colon. We detox through our colon, but we also detox through our lymphatic system. We also detox through our sweat glands. And so if you're living a sedate lifestyle where the only thing you do is you get up in the morning, you eat your donuts and drink your coffee, you go to work and you sit at a computer all day, you come home, you grab the TV clicker and you go nuke a microwave pizza and drink a beer, boy, I tell you what, your body's toxic and it's a cancer breeding ground, because you're not getting good food in it, you're getting toxic food, but you're also not going to be detoxing through your skin because you're not sweating at all, and you're not going to be detoxing through your lymphatic system because you're not moving up and down at all. And your colon actually is probably not a very good detox system for you either, because you're probably clogged up in your colon. So you've got a long way to go. And so that is the start of a cancer treatment protocol, is completely revamping, changing the things that you've been doing that could have led to that cancer.
Wow, that's fantastic. And you know, when we're rebounding in our front room, should we be watching a Richard Simmons video at the same time?
You know what? Watch whatever floats your boat, to tell you the truth, because whatever will keep you going. Heck, if I was watching Richard Simmons on a rebounder, I'd probably be laughing so hard I'd fall off the rebounder. But if that's what you want to do, that's fine. The main thing is, if you need to watch TV while you're doing it, watch TV while you're doing it, so just so that you can do the 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. I've got a good friend that used to treat cancer up there in Kelowna, British Columbia, and his name's Dr. Darrell Wolf. He's retired now, but he used to run the Wolf Clinic, and he treated hundreds and hundreds of cancer patients successfully. And the first thing that he did when he got a cancer patient is he would put them through a full-body detox, and he'd put them on the rebounder 20 minutes a session twice a day. And so whatever it takes to get you on that rebounder and get that lymphatic system flowing, you do it. So if you want to watch Richard Simmons, that's fine.
That's great, Ty. What a good word. And what a great discussion on this very important topic. Now, everyone listening to this, students, grads, our friends out there around the planet, cancer, step outside the box. Make that part of your library. Get to the site. Go to Amazon. Find the book. Get a copy. The physical book, the ebook. I myself like ebooks. Whatever method works for you. But read this book. Be armed. Ty Bollinger is a CPA, healthcare freedom fighter, cancer researcher, and athlete, and has the consciousness that depicts the kind of man that I would take advice from. You can feel the goodwill, the interest, the research, what's obvious. People, we have got to look and listen and get on the right track. Ty Bollinger, we thank you very much.
Corey, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it today. This has been a great interview. I really enjoyed talking with you. I hope it's been beneficial. I look forward to doing it again sometime. That'd be fantastic.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Representing lifestyle, new way of life. Listen, it's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.